This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Winning in hour number two of Sharp Money here. Dave Ross, Amal Shaw coming at you from South Point Casino and Hotel in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Oh, my goodness. Here's the thing. If you've got, like, say, the under on the Cubs-Cardinals game, 4-1, by the way, right now in Chicago, you can't drop pop-ups. Like, what are we doing, Cardinals? They have been such a train wreck this year.
Defensively, they've been horrendous. As Paul Goldschmidt, former Gold Glove winner, just on a fairly basic pop-up. It wasn't even a sky-high pop-up where the sun comes
in. Can you and I make that play?
Yes, absolutely.
Then Paul Goldschmidt can make
it. It looked
like
he was going to make that play because he kind of just did the turns like, I got this. I'm going to scoop it.
Well, maybe he had the look. I mean, we'll give him the
No.
Maybe
it wasn't because it wasn't high enough. It was just like a little flare.
It's not high enough. What do you mean too high? Too high.
And the next one, Yan Gomes strikes out on the next play. But you know, one of the things that drives me nuts in baseball, I don't know if these shortstops and second basemen have in their contracts that they get a bonus if they get more putouts than the right fielder or the center fielder or the left fielder.
I got it.
It's so much easier coming in on a ball.
Let the outfielder take the ball.
Yeah, no, they have to make the catch. It's unbelievable.
Don't understand it. By the way, Lou Finocchiaro is going to join us in the next segment to talk all things UFC Fight Night. Really good card overseas in England. He says he's watching, critiquing the show, disagrees with my assertion that Pete Carroll should have been coach of the year last year. Lou says Doug Peterson of the Jacksonville Jaguars. You can make that case. I just thought maybe they had higher expectations with the Goldilocks there and Trevor Lawrence waiting for him to arrive.
So I'm not defending you because you're my partner and you're my guy, but the reason why you can't give it to Doug Peterson, let me mention the other three teams in that division.
Oh,
the Tennessee Titans,
garbage.
The Indianapolis Colts, and the Houston Texans.
I'm sure Lou's going to retort when we have him on the next segment before we talk
UFC. All I'm saying is when you get to play those teams for six of your 17 games, you should have a pretty decent season.
Old man Pete. But the Jaguars were, a dumpster fire. What
did we say about Seattle this time last year? You just traded away the Hall of Fame quarterback and Russell Wilson. You got Geno Smith, ha, ha, ha. Or Drew Locke, they're supposed to be laughingstocks. They won 9 games and went to the postseason.
Let me ask this. Going into last year, who did you think had the better roster, Jacksonville or
Jacksonville.
Seattle?
Jacksonville. Nobody thought Geno Smith was going to be Geno Smith.
He's absolutely right.
Nobody. They were predicted to be one of the worst teams in the league last year, and they somehow got a wild card and were leading San Francisco in the third quarter. I know people have issues with Pete Carroll and the way maybe he calls games. I understand that. He did a remarkable job of making that a 9-win team with a defense that looked porous, and somehow they made their way in. That's my case, Counselor.
Real quick.
Bring it.
They had 9 wins in the regular season. They were 9-8. They beat the Colts, who were under 500, a couple of times. They beat them once. They actually went 1-1 against the Colts.
Well, they beat the Titans to win the division with a quarterback off the street.
Yeah, exactly. A third-string quarterback, right?
Like, he was literally off the street, like hitchhiking.
I was looking for Nate Dogg. I was looking for Nate Dogg and Warren G.
Off the street.
Can't be taking no geek off the street. I mean, come on.
Got to be good with the steel.
Regulated. Exactly.
Little young guns there. So let's talk a little bit more NFL, speaking of. And the ultimate gun right now in the NFL is 15. Right? We get it in Kansas City. It's Patrick Mahomes, reigning defending MVP. Okay? So when you look at some of these market shares here for Patrick Mahomes to have the most regular season passing yards, he's the betting favorite at 3-1. We get that. He did it last year with kind of an anonymous wide receiving roster. And it feels like now that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your name is. If you're a wide receiver, Mahomes is going to figure out a way to get it to you. But I can't play that small favorite at 3-1. If you go down the board a little bit, look, Josh Allen, tough to get this in the marketplace 8-1 because he's going to run the ball a lot, right?
Yeah.
Herbert feels like the guy that jumps off the screen here, plus 650. Because they got Boy Genius 8.0 out of Dallas, and you know that Kellen Moore wants to chuck it all over L.A. That's what he's going to want to do. He doesn't want to run the ball. He wants to throw the football.
Well, I think they should. I mean, they've got the capability to do so. You mentioned Mahomes. I will say this. Joe Burrow is closer to Patrick Mahomes than maybe some people might realize or think. I still love Aaron Rodgers. I think Rodgers is we all know he's an all-timer, but he's the most accurate passer I've ever seen. But I don't know, outside of Dan Marino, if there's any quarterback I've ever enjoyed watching more than Patrick Mahomes.
Wow.
He is just, to me, like, he is must-see TV. I'm not a Chiefs fan, but I can tell you one thing, Dave. I do pay attention to every Chiefs game because just watching him and Kelce operate is surgical.
And that's the thing. So when you're looking at passing yards, you mentioned he's going to go to the tight end a lot.
Well, that's why I think he could be a guy that's up there and leading the league in passing yardage. But I'm going to tell you, your guy Dakota Prescott's got a shot here.
Well, 13-1
yeah, for like Super Dak 4? Number.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Speaking of, the only, I guess the caveat here is because Kellen Moore is now in L.A.
Yeah.
And Big Mike and Schottenheimer, they're going to kind of, I think it's really, this is the Mike McCarthy effect of I want to run the football.
Here's the problem. Okay. You don't have Zeke as a bell cow. Pollard's coming off of a foot injury. He's a speed guy. You and I have talked about this. We've had some discussions about this. I don't think people gave Zeke enough credit for in terms of
how much he
loosens up the interior of the defense and Pollard gets on the perimeter. You look at some of the games where Pollard was the main guy, you'd see like 8 carries, 12 yards, you know, 10 carries, 10 yards.
When you're keying on him, it's a little bit easier.
It's a little bit, yeah, absolutely. So I think when you look at the receiving core with CeeDee Lamb, with Michael Gallup, this team is extremely dangerous.
And, you know, like Brandon Cooks, I know people in Dallas.
I'm sorry.
Well, they're really excited about having Brandon Cooks in the slot this year, maybe to take pressure off Gallup, coming back off the ACL, full year removed from that. CD feels like he has blossomed into a number one, which is what the expectation of him being a first-round pick. I'm with you. If McCarthy says, all right, four, I trust you. Now, remember, what did Dak say this week? I'm not going to throw 10 picks.
Yeah.
It better not mean that he's going to throw 20. Like, if he's really going to be under that limit of 10, which he has in his head. Remember, Geno Smith, we just talked about, threw 11 all of last year. So while people are laughing, like, oh, Geno Smith barely got to that number. So if Dak can be good with the football, he will have markets and targets that at 13-1, that market feels like it could be in play.
Let me ask you this about Dak. Here's my problem. Geno Smith doesn't take risk. He's not going to make certain throws that Dak will make. And I'm not giving Dak credit for being some great passer. Okay. I just like the fact that he will take some shots that Geno may not. What do you feel about Dak Prescott's accuracy?
I think before the injury last year, I didn't question it. I questioned it after. You and I were doing shows last year together during football season. And that was, I kept saying, this is not the same guy. I was not seeing the same pre-injury to the hand, which is a tough deal. You know, you miss the time. Cooper Rush has got to play. People forget that. It was his throwing hand. So that's a big deal. I expect Dak Prescott to return to the guy that got the big contract, that was good with the football. And if that's the case, then I think a lot of these numbers that you see in your screen right here could be in plays for some overs. He just can't turn it over. The prop is set at 13.5 for the picks. He says he's not going to throw 10. Well,
I can tell you right now, the 13.5 is a great bet on the under. I thought it was a little bit lower on the number. 15 last year, you mentioned it. Not necessarily a great season last year from that standpoint. The rest of his career, he's never thrown more than 13 picks.
Right.
And 13 came in his second year. Let's look at the in-between years there. His third year, 8 picks, 11, 4. Now, granted, that year he didn't play a ton. But 2021, 37-10. 2019, 30-11. 2018, 22-8. 22-13. 23-4 his first year. I think this is a great bet on Dak Prescott.
Right there with you. Let's, for Lou Finocchiaro's sake, who's joining us next, and he mentioned those Jaguars. Trevor Lawrence is 22-1 to have the most passing yards in the NFL this year. Now, I don't know that Doug Peterson cares about what Mr. Miyagi preached to Daniels, balance. I don't know that he cares about balance. And so, like, I know Kellen Moore doesn't care about balance, so Austin Eckler, maybe I'm looking unders on some of his props. But could Trevor Lawrence really, because he broke out last year, Amal, could he carry that a little bit? They've got weapons on the outside. And I just go, man, maybe Doug Peterson says, okay, we're really going to let our kid chuck it all over the yard.
So you probably think that Zay Jones and Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley are probably better than I do. I think they're solid. I think they're good, but I don't think they're elite or great. To me, the other factor is when you look at this team, you've got Travis Etienne. They bring in Tank Bigsby. I think this is a team that's going to run the football at times. I think Etienne's a tremendous running back and can be. I'm not going to back Trevor Lawrence at 23-1 to lead the league in passing yardage.
The only, I guess you know better than I, who is Calvin Ridley? Because now with all this time away, you almost have to go back to Alabama and go, okay, now I see why the Falcons drafted him first overall. gambling issues behind him. He's back in the league. I don't think and nobody in the locker room cares about his past. They care about, can you play? Is this guy going to be worthy? Is he the number one target for Lawrence there?
Yeah, he's going to be the number one guy. I mean, Christian Kirk got paid like he's a number one, but I don't think he's number one. Calvin Ridley, keep in mind, is 28 years old. He will be 29 in December. And the reason why he's only entering his sixth year in the NFL.
29 already, though?
Well, because
crept up.
Well, no, here's the thing. He was like 20 in his senior year in high school.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it was like one of those, hey, we're going to hold the guy back 9 years so he can dominate. I mean, why are you shaking your head?
That is one of the worst things that has happened over the last...
I don't think he played his senior year. I don't think he was eligible to play. I don't recall exactly, because in South Florida, there's a rule you can't be like over 19
even,
or something.
Even then, holding your kid back a year so he can be better at sports...
Delusional parents?
I know, that's what they do.
All their kids are going to the pros. Somehow the NBA only seems to draft 64 players every year.
I agree. I don't disagree with that comment.
But that's why now all of a sudden you look up, he's 29, and sometimes you get on the other side of 30, and you go, does he still have the same speed? We haven't seen him play in a while. Look, I'm with you. I'm not going to play Trevor Lawrence at 22-1 to win this, to have the most passing yards. But to me, I think there's a concern if that is your number one, and we haven't seen him in a while, now he's 29.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to finish the point on that, it's like whenever somebody tells you about their kids or grandkids, and they're like, I always say to them, listen, unless your kids are doing time, I don't want to know the story. Because like, I already know they're the greatest.
The greatest.
They're absolutely. But if they're doing time, I want to hear the story.
Honor roll students. They put it on their bumper sticker.
By the way, maybe we can get Jerry Remy up here if we need to talk about kids doing time.
Wow. When we come back, Lufin and Carroll talking all things fight night in the UFC. That's next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We all know about the speed of sound, but have you ever thought about the sounds of speeding? If you drive over the speed limit, there are a lot of sounds you don't want to hear. The first sound of your vehicle crashing, the sound of first responders desperately trying to save you. You could even hear the sound of people crying. Well, you wouldn't hear it at your own funeral, but you get the idea. Because if you drive over the speed limit, you could do damage that's beyond repair. One way or another, speeding is going to catch up with you. Paid for by NHTSA or NHTSA. And I think this message goes out to Jordan Addison. Slow it down, young man. You do not need to be driving. What was he driving?
140. He was only, Dave, he was only 85 over the speed limit.
Just 85.
Yeah.
I get pulled over for 15 over. I'm like, come on.
I'm actually surprised he wasn't charged with a felony.
In seriousness, and that's why we brought to you by NHTSA there, just take a load off, kids, because life is too short. You don't need to be driving like a madman out there. It's not going to end well. Okay, we're going to we're going to talk all things fight night here in a couple minutes here with Lufin and Carroll. Really interesting card overseas. It feels like right now England, you can make the case, and I'm sure Dana White thought of this. You got the British Open going on in England. Why not bring a big event over there and have a real European flavor to the card? Tom Aspinall back in against Marcin Tybura. That's the main event tomorrow night in the O2 Arena overseas. And I'm all, I got to tell you, I know, like, we're going to root for our Americans when they get over there. That atmosphere, it is live. And it does, I believe, influence judges because they hear the pops from the crowd. It's almost like telling judges to take the human element out of it. Yeah. It's impossible to do so when you have these raucous crowds. Let's bring in the aforementioned Lufin and Carroll. You can follow him, as I do, at Gamboo on Twitter. He is the host of the Bout Business podcast. Lou, before we get to that card, did Amal and I sell you that we think Pete Carroll should have been Coach of the Year last year and not Doug Peterson?
No, not one bit, but you know what? Respective disagreement is what our channel is on, and so I'm just tickled to be with you guys this afternoon in NFL dead time, right below before the storm, so we get a little UFC shine.
Hey, Lou, first of all, we appreciate you joining us. Real quick before we go into the UFC, just kind of make the case from your perspective on Doug Peterson and the Jacksonville Jaguars. Brian Daboll, rightfully so, won the Coach of the Year last year. My only counter against Doug Peterson was the fact that Jacksonville, if you had Tannehill, I don't even know if they make the postseason. I mean, they were in the position Tennessee was to win, even without a quarterback potentially.
Well, first of all, I don't believe Tannehill to be the refuse that you allude to.
I don't think he's an all-world beater.
I don't think he's an all-world beater, but to move on and try and answer your question, I think that Doug Peterson inherited a flaming jalopy, and he turned it around quickly. And I think that this year they're poised to improve upon that. And the greatest thing that happened in their division just happened a few days ago when Schein went to Tennessee with the receiver Hopkins from Arizona that went there. That might now put a little shine on Tennessee and make Jacksonville's price, if we keep real quiet, a little bit more advantageous.
By the way, as you guys say in the fight world, it's time. Go ahead, Dave. It's time for you to take over.
And Lou and I have a lot of these conversations. So we had a great one about Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
I contend that Holyfield would have beat him 10 out of 10. And Lou thinks that's rather ridiculous. So
I do think it's ridiculous, so please continue.
Let's get to this card here because, again, Lou, we're talking about it before we welcomed you on the show. You know how this is over there at the O2 in England. You know how the crowd is and how they might react to, quote-unquote, their fighters. Do you take that into account just broadly into your handicaps for fights that you think might hit the cards?
Absolutely. You have to handicap that, Dave. These people, first of all, we know that this is going to be prime time for them, so they'll have had double the amount of pints had this not been at 8 a.m. So they're going to be fully lubed. The crowd's going to be raucous. I do believe that it can sway, especially in the case where you may have an Englishman against a non-European or a European against a non-European. The crowd's one side. And actually, I've tried to diagnose a fight or two on the card with an over-under of 2.5, heavily shaded over, that I can maybe look to a majority decision, excuse me for not spitting that out, or a split decision. The menu at DraftKings is phenomenal. And since I'm teasing, I'll go right to the fight. I'm looking at Alvarez and Diakazi at 155 on the preliminary. Alvarez from Spain, Diakazi, the English fighter. I believe Diakazi has the wrestling chops, and Alvarez has the desire to work off his back that could make for a decision fight. Further, even though Alvarez has not fought to a decision, I believe the wrestling chops of Diakazi forced this to a decision, and Diakazi via split, he's the Englishman now, via split or majority decision is 11-1. Diakazi's an underdog. I'm playing straight up anyway, and so I'll have to do a little bit of a taste at 11-1 via split or majority decision because I believe that's his path to victory.
Love it. And again, right now, Diakazi in that fight against Alvarez, that over 2.5, you can get plus money at a plus $1.45, and right now plus $1.70 straight on the underdog. But I'm right there with you. And again, shout out to the First Strike crew, wherever you get your podcast, talked a lot about this fight. It feels like a very live dog scenario there. I do want to get to another dog that I think that you like in this fight before we get to the bigger fights in the card. And that's Lerone Murphy is undefeated. And it feels like for that reason, he's a $1.40 favorite over Josh Koulibaly. Are you looking at Koulibaly here plus $1.20 that maybe people just look at that O and don't realize the quality competition that Koulibaly's faced?
Well, first of all, this is a very tight line, David. Open Murphy minus 160, and it's actually contracted just a touch to where it is now at minus 140 or 45, I think. And so a little bit of action's come in on, I'll say Koulibaly, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it. Koulibaly, I think, is getting overlooked in this spot. He's an Australian shipping in, but I love his win against Melsick. And in this fight, Lerone Murphy will be at advantage standing. He's the more structured, erect, strong, forceful striker. Koulibaly, by far, the more well-rounded fighter. And I think if Koulibaly can take him late, get him down, I think Koulibaly, even though it's Lerone Murphy's birthday and we're in England, this is a great opportunity for Koulibaly. And I think this, just like I think the other fight with Diakazi, this could easily be a split decision or a majority decision win, because you look at the over in this fight at minus 190, and they're expecting this one to go to the judges.
Yeah, that definitely feels like a fight that's got the propensity to go all three. Let's go right to the top of the card, okay, because it's something we talked a little bit about, and I know we talked about a lot about it this week on First Strike. You got Tom Aspinall, and we know this is a guy, Lou, that felt like he was pedigreed possibly to make a run at the title in the heavyweight division. And then the gruesome injury, the Achilles blowout a year ago, almost to the day, against Curtis Blaydes. And now you come back and you got a tough guy in there against Marcin Tybura, and you're almost a $5 betting favorite. How do you handicap this main event? And again, right now that total sitting at 1.5, you can get plus money if you think this thing goes at least 7.5 minutes.
Dave, I believe that I've been wrong all week, because I've been calling Aspinall's injury an ACL, and if it's an Achilles, that sways my opinion against him even further, because it's been just 1 year since he has recovered from that. It was in a fight against Curtis Blaydes where he blew it, and we as fight fans were really rocked of being able to learn a lot from that fight, because Curtis Blaydes is so apt, and he was game, and he was touching Aspinall even though it was early in the fight. Tybura is the bigger, slower 37-year-old. You know, he's older, and I think that if Aspinall is on his game, he's going to be faster, more athletic. You saw him in the stare down, jumping around, bouncing around. Clearly, Aspinall wants to go out and make a statement, and I think it's in Tybura's interest to take this deep and try and drag him into round three, somewhere where Aspinall hasn't been in a couple of years.
My mistake. It was the knee injury. You're 100% correct that he's coming back from, but it is almost a year to the date here coming back from that knee against Curtis Blaydes, and yet here he is still minus 475 today. But I'm with you. The overplays feels like the way to go at plus $1.40. Very quickly, 15 seconds, tell the people what they get on the Bout Business podcast.
They get my final releases each week, and they're issued after weigh-ins. Good luck to everybody. Thanks for having me on, Amal and Dave. I really appreciate it, and enjoy the fight.
Cannot wait. There he is, everybody. Lou Finicaro. Give him a follow at GamWoo. Coming back, talk more NFL next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You're going to get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort those picks out by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the current hot hand. So for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $19 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross here. We will get back to the NFL in just a little bit, but because, I mean, you're here, we got to talk college football. By the way, is excitement the wrong word to choose for you as you get ready for the beginning? Like, what's the word that best describes your outlook to the upcoming college football season?
Two words, the great Bart Scott quote. Can't wait.
You love it. You absolutely
wait.
Love it.
Absolutely.
I love your enthusiasm when it comes to college football. Let's go to the SEC.
Yep.
Because I guess it is still regarded as the best conference in all of college football. I'm sure other Big Ten people might take umbrage, but it feels like it's still SEC and then everybody else.
For about the last 2.5 decades.
That's the way it's been.
Yeah.
Now, to win that final game in Atlanta in that SEC championship game, mm-hmm. Georgia, still the faves at -$1.15 to get that done. I don't want to keep calling this the Nick Saban revenge tour, uh-huh. but at 3-1, you know this is sticking in his craw just a little bit, that all of a sudden it's not Bama that we're talking about year in and year out, that it is Georgia that feels like now has that top spot. And then you get to the LSUs at +450, and then we see the drop-off, right? 14-1 to get to the Tennessees. Before we talk about the big three, is there anybody that could surprise from the double-digit odds or beyond that have a realistic pathway to get to Georgia?
let's eliminate the SEC East. There's nobody else there. They're not. There's Georgia's schedule combined with the ineptitude of everybody else in the East. Think about this. On Georgia's schedule, the highest season win total of any team is Tennessee at 7.5.
Oof.
So that tells you all you need to know about the current situation in terms of who they're facing. And for me, when I look at it, Georgia, even though they've got to replace their quarterback in terms of Stetson Bennett, I think it's going to be a real challenge for this team. And I'm sorry, they won't be challenged at all. I just think they're going to be prohibitive favorites in every game that they play. They should get to Atlanta, no problem. On the other side, Alabama. Obviously, there's a ton of affinity for LSU. I think LSU should be a good team. And what helps LSU is they get the early test against Florida State in Orlando to open the season on Sunday, Labor Day weekend. But that game, even if they lose, doesn't even really hurt them. It does in terms of a playoff standpoint, because then your margin for error diminishes greatly. But in terms of the SEC West, doesn't matter. So I would still take Alabama at 3-1. I think they're the best bet on the board. We really don't know what Georgia's offense, even though they got a very good receiving core, Alabama is decent in terms of the offensive line, pretty good depth at the running back position, wide receivers probably a little bit shakier than they've been in years past. And then the big question mark, Dave, comes in at the quarterback position. That's the question. Who's going to get the start here? Tyler Buchner? Is it going to be Ty Simpson? And then, of course, the guy that I like, Jalen Milroe. Milroe didn't play particularly well against A&M. But I'm going to tell you what, this guy can run. And when the play breaks down, and in college football, having a mobile quarterback is invaluable.
Totally agree. And I look at this, and again, you mentioned Bama being the best bet to win it today at 3-1 value play. When I look at LSU at plus 450, I look at family and what Brian Kelly was able to do in year one, and I kind of marvel. And I go, I'm sure you saw some of this coming. I don't know that the general public did. What do you make of year two now with Brian Kelly? And are we to the point of calling Baton Rouge the third head in the three-headed tiger? That would be Georgia, Bama. Can we include LSU in that running?
Yeah, great question. I would say let's wait until 2024.
Okay.
I think 2022 and 23 are going to be great years for LSU. They've got an opportunity this year to really go 10-2. They've got a couple of difficult spots on the schedule. November 4th, off of a bye, they go to Tuscaloosa. That could be the determining factor as to which team winds up in Atlanta from the SEC West. They've got an early game I mentioned against Florida State Sunday, September 3rd. Also, they go to Stark Vegas on the 16th. The Razorbacks come calling down to Baton Rouge. I'm telling you, with KJ Jefferson back under center, it'll be a challenge. It's not going to be a push-up or a layup against this team that Sam Pittman coaches. He does a nice job. Mm-hmm. The rest of the schedule is very manageable. Gators are always a tough game. They just seem to play LSU tough. Auburn, this game at home, LSU should be able to control. I'm not really concerned about A&M. We could be in a situation where they're looking at firing Jimbo Fisher. I think the buyout at that point is $73 million.
Wow.
I think LSU is a very, very good team. If the game were in Baton Rouge this year, I'd give them a much better chance to win the SEC West. But because they have to go to Tuscaloosa, give the edge to the Crimson Tide.
Very quickly, before we go to some other teams in the SEC, that first week, and I know how much you and I were talking about it a year ago, that Florida State game in week one. What about this year now against Florida State? Because it feels like everybody down there in Tallahassee is really excited about what a Florida State, because it could be an early tripping point before they ever get into conference play.
Well, it could for both sides, but I love Florida State in this matchup. They're about a 1 or 2 point dog. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. I think Jordan Travis at 14-1 is the best Heisman bet on the board. Caleb Williams is the prohibitive favorite at 4.5, 5-1, and rightfully so. But to me, Travis is the best dual threat out there. Caleb Williams is a mobile quarterback. He doesn't run the way Travis does, but don't get me wrong. He can run the football, and he is the best quarterback in college football. But this team, when you look at them, I like the depth. I like the talent that the Seminoles have. So this is going to be a real challenge here for LSU. It will not be a layup by any stretch. And remember, last year it was in the Superdome in New Orleans. This year you're in Orlando.
All right, that's going to be a wild one before they even get to SEC play. All right, Tennessee had a dream season going until the quarterback got his leg blown up and Hendon Hooker and was a short list for Heisman Trophy. What about now with Josh Heupel? What do the Vols look like with that up-tempo offense this year? Are they out of the surprise category because of what they did last year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's high expectations this year for the Tennessee Volunteers. The other thing is keep in mind, you think about the players that they lost from last year. You lose the kind of talent that they lost, all of a sudden it changed the dynamic of how you look at Tennessee. That's one of the things I think that can't be overstated. They lose Darnell Wright at left tackle. He did a tremendous job. You lose Hendon Hooker. You lose Jalin Hyatt, all guys that had tremendous impacts on this offense. You lose tackle, quarterback, wide receiver. It's going to be hard to overcome. Look, they have some good players on the outside. Brew McCoy, if the name sounds familiar, he's the old USC transfer. Squirrel White, we know, can scoot. He's just a sophomore, should have an even better year. Bazooka Joe, because he probably has the strongest arm in college football, Joe Milton.
And look great in the bowl game.
Yeah, absolutely. But accuracy at times is a little bit of a problem. It can be a bit erratic. Running game is decent. I really like Jabari Small. He's right there with Jalen Wright in terms of their starting tailback. This team is pretty good. Defensively, where they're at will remain to be seen in terms of how effective they are. Remember, they gave up 63 points to that Spencer Rattler and South Carolina team.
Yeah, that the defense was challenged, let's put it that way, last year down there for Tennessee Nation. Okay, they are 14-1, Tennessee, to win the SEC. The same number for Jimbo Fisher and A&M. And I know there's no way you're playing that when you're talking about maybe Jimbo doesn't even make it through the end of the season. What's going on down there at College Station? And do you really look at A&M and say, this could be it if Jimbo can't figure this thing out?
Well, first of all, you've got to address the elephant in the room. The expectations at Texas A&M are just straight up delusional.
Ooh.
Okay? I mean, you don't sit there and take Kansas football and sit there and say, hey, we should be winning national titles. The reality is, yes, A&M is in a great, great location to recruit, state of Texas and near Houston. That's obviously something that's a huge benefit. But this team is just a pretty good team in the best division in college football in the SEC West, in the best conference in college football, and they're not close to these teams. Right now, when you look at the quarterback situation, whether it's going to be Connor Wegman, Max Johnson, the LSU transfer, Marcel Reed, a big-time recruit for them, I don't know who's going to be the consistent starter for this team. You got to replace Devin Achane at the tailback position. There's some questions here. They've recruited extremely well. Evan Stewart is a big-time receiver. Let's see if he makes a jump up. He's a five-star recruit that's had big expectations. Aeneas Smith, same thing. So we'll see when you look at this team. Defensively, they're usually pretty solid. I expect to be the same thing here. Shamar Turner should have a big year for this team on the defensive side of the ball. But you look at the schedule. You got to go to Rocky Top. Mm-hmm. That's a cross-conference game. You've got to go to LSU. You do host Alabama and Arkansas in back-to-back weeks. But overall, I think this team, and they got to go to Miami as well. So this team, if the season breaks well, I think they're 9-3. Realistically, probably about a 7-5 team.
Wow. And see, that's the thing. So what's the number of wins that Jimbo has to had in order to keep his job? And then two, does he want to keep his job? Is he looking for the backdoor exit of like, man, you've already paid me. Like, go ahead, buy me out, boosters. Go ahead, and I'll take my wares back to Florida or somewhere else.
Yeah, you know, I think that's an interesting point you bring up. I don't know if he'll get an opportunity in another big program if he gets fired here, because that would be two programs he's been fired at. But the reality of it is, I think he's a guy that right now really has got to get to 9 wins, maybe 10 wins. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. You've got to beat Bama at home. You've got to get the Miami win just to get the season rolling. I'm going to tell you, Dave, if they lose that game against Miami, you're going to start to hear the issues come about with this team.
Remember this time last year was Jimbo and Saban, they were sniping at each other. Feels like that conversation has been muted, and now we're wondering if Jimbo can keep his job. Okay, when we come back, let's talk a little bit more college football, maybe some other teams in the SEC. If we don't think they can win the conference, obviously some other ways to attack them. Come on back, Sharp Money here on Visa.
Is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
The NFL betting guide is already out. Our college football guide is coming out in just a couple weeks. Only VSIN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every single team with advanced stats and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. So sign up before the end of July, receive both guides and full VSIN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. Or sign up for a monthly subscription, get your first 30 days for only $19 to see everything VSIN has to help up your betting game. This offer does end on July 31st, so don't miss out on these preseason deals. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Alongside Amal Shaw, Dave Ross rolling on this edition of Sharp Money. You said Bart Scott can't wait for college football. Yep. Even week zero, like, are you just like, let's just kick it off, boys?
No, week zero, you just watch because it's football.
Right.
But, I mean,
that's a month. We're a month away.
Well, the week zero schedule is so bad. I mean, they just need to stop with this. It really is.
So who pointed it out to us? Caleb Williams, the reigning Heisman defender and, you know, the favorite to win is going to be on the Pac-12 network that no one gets.
Yeah, what a bad way to showcase your best player in the game right now.
Navy, Notre Dame, UTEP, Jacksonville State, Ohio, San Diego State, UMass, NMSU, Hawaii, Vanderbilt, and San Jose State, USC on the Pac-12 network at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. That's great. They're going to get their one game.
Navy Notre Dame, that would be the one game that's going to intrigue me on week zero. Just because, yeah. You know, you look at Navy, the way they run their offense, right, and the way it's historically Notre Dame should roll.
Yeah.
But could that be somewhat intriguing for a half?
It could be for a little while, but I still think that the Naval Academy right now is kind of in a rebuild mode, and Notre Dame, they should have a pretty good season, so they're in a pretty good spot here in this game in Dublin, Ireland.
Let's get back to the SEC. The best conference in all the land. So we kind of went through the heavy hitters, if you will, obviously the Georgia, Alabama's, LSU's, Tennessee's, and the A&M's of the world. And then after you get from those numbers, which was the longest of those good teams, are 14-1 for Tennessee and A&M to get to Georgia and win it. Then we really start going long shots. The Ole Misses, the Auburns, South Kakalakis, Florida's, and beyond. I want to start down there at the Grove at Ole Miss. 45-1. Now, I'm not sure, but I don't believe Eli Manning's walking through that door. What do you make of what Lane's got cooking down there at Ole Miss? Is this a team? We know what style they want to play. Do they have the athletes to run what they want to run?
Yeah, in theory they do, right? You've got Jackson Dart back at quarterback, the USC transfer. Spencer Sanders transfers in from Oklahoma State. Good mobility in case Jackson Dart's not the guy. And then you've got Walker Howard, an LSU transfer there. So they do have some good depth at quarterback. They could be effective here. Zachary Franklin transfers in as well. He's a guy that can be effective for them on the perimeter. Remember, he's a guy that they're going to need to be effective as he comes over. As he transferred from UTSA, was a tremendous receiver for that offense with those team with that team. But the big thing right now is defensively, they're not as good, and the running game is not as good as it's been in years past, Dave. And that's the area where they need to be effective. I think people don't realize they've been able to run the ball effectively with Lane Train, and that's what's keeps some of the success, not just the passing game.
Great point, because I think everybody just goes, Lane Kiffin throws it all over God's green earth. But it's really, that's not the way he likes to run it.
Yeah.
He wants to run fullbacks and fullback dives, if you will. We're running stuff, spreading everybody out, and then kind of running up the gut. Does he have the athletes to do that, or is it really going to be Jackson Dart, and then you kind of hope that the defense holds up?
Yeah, I think this team could be effective offensively. I still think Lane Kiffin's the best play caller in college football. So they're going to be effective from an offensive standpoint. But what do you get out of the defense? We've seen games against Arkansas a couple of years ago. They play well. They just defensively, they don't get it done. Last year, they got a nice stop against Will Levis, but I thought that turnover was more on him than necessarily in the defense. So when the offense is bogged down, can this team deliver offensively? They got to go down to the Plains third week in October. That'll be a tough game. Mid-September, they're in Tuscaloosa. LSU the following week. I mean, you talk about a brutal back-to-back-to-back at Tuscaloosa, home to LSU, home to Arkansas, and then you get a bye and you go on the road at Auburn. The back of the schedule's not bad against A&M. They could win that game at home. At Georgia, they expect them to get blown out, but then UL Monroe and at Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl.
Yeah, it's so fascinating because I think everybody looks at Lane Kiffin's offense. They think gimmick. Yeah. He tries to be physical, and they would like to be able to run the ball and then sets up the passing game that way, but we know they love to go up-tempo. I guess when you go to the Plains, the only thing better than an Alabama loss is an Auburn win. They haven't gotten enough of them in recent years. What do you make of where this program is? Extreme long shot here to win the SEC at 80-1.
Yeah, Hugh Freeze takes over for Brian Harsin. I think he's a tremendous coach. How effective he'll be in year one remains to be seen. Peyton Thorne, the Michigan State transfer, comes in there. I'm not a big fan of his. You've got Robbie Ashford, redshirt sophomore. He's got good mobility, not necessarily the most accurate passer as a backup quarterback on this team. So some concerns there. They've got a ton of transfers in, which comes as really no surprise with what this team is going to do. The question is, can they get these guys to come in and gel? Defensively, Auburn has been solid over the last several years. But again, we'll see where they're at. Not necessarily enamored with the Tigers this year, maybe in about a year or so.
You know, you mentioned Hugh Freeze, and look, he no disrespect to Liberty. I know that neck of the woods pretty well up there. He wanted out, right? He was ready to leave and get to another big job. We know about the checkered past. But where do you put him now? And I know you like Lane Kiffin as the best play caller in college football. Is Hugh Freeze now back in the SEC? Is he kind of going, hey, you guys might have forgotten about me. But when he was in there the first time, it kind of wreaked havoc on some other schools.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think Hugh Freeze, once he gets the players in there that he had at Ole Miss, I think he can be tremendously competitive against Alabama. And that's the one thing you look at, as great as Nick Saban has been, Auburn has competed against Alabama, even when they've had far inferior talent.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And you know that I'm going to bring up a Beamer and look at what they got cooking down there at South Carolina. And I think Shane's done a pretty good job with this football team. Really came on at the end of last year, 90-1, extreme long shots to win it in the SEC this year. What is he doing down there, the culture that maybe he's building at South Kakalaki?
Well, first of all, a couple things. Let's start from a social media standpoint. They do a tremendous job. Shane Beamer's in his early 40s, getting on social media, getting out there and doing a bunch of different things. I mean, it's just fantastic. Also, when you look at this team right now, he brings in Spencer Rattler, a transfer, a guy that was given up on. Remember, Caleb Williams took over for him at Oklahoma. Now you look at him, he's revived his career, and if he has a great year, he's going to go in the first round. So this is a team you got to pay attention to. I like what they've done in terms of kind of revitalizing some guys at the tight end position and other things in the past. You got Rattler, that's a great starting point. Juju McDowell at the tailback position. So this team can be very dangerous offensively. Offensive line should be very solid. Defensively is where the concerns come in. Can they slow down some of these teams that you got to face? Because you have a lot of teams in the SEC that have returning quarterbacks outside of Georgia and outside of Alabama. LSU's got Daniels back, KJ Jefferson back at Arkansas, Jackson Dart back at Ole Miss, Will Rogers back at Mississippi State. So you're looking at these teams right now, you're going to be playing experienced teams. From a talent standpoint, Dave, I'll tell you right now, I know Joe Milton's got the arm. The best quarterback in the Southeastern Conference resides in Columbia, Missouri.
Wow, didn't expect that to come.
No, you didn't, I know.
Very quickly, because we only got a couple minutes to go here. I'll give you three teams at 100-1.
Okay.
Give me the best chance to really upset the apple cart. Florida, Kentucky, or Arkansas at 100-1?
Ooh, God, I was ready to go Kentucky because I love Mark Stoops as a coach. They do have to replace the quarterback. I'm going to go with the Razorbacks, even though they're in the tougher division. Now, let me amend that. I'm going to go Kentucky.
Kentucky
because they know what they want to do. They're going to defend. They're going to run the football. And then they're going to beat you a little bit through the air when the opportunities present itself. But I think you're absolutely right in terms of your question. The reason why I was looking towards Arkansas, I love Sam Pittman as a coach. I think he's a tremendous defensive coach. You bring back KJ Jefferson. But Mark Stoops, this guy gets more out of his talent than almost anybody in college football. If you gave Mark Stoops some more talent, I think this team would be much better. Now, Devin Leary comes in, the NC State transfer. We'll see how effective he can be. I'm not a big fan of his, but let's see how effective he can be in this scenario here. And I just think Mark Stoops will play to his strengths.
Yeah, and again, I'm with you on the coaching aspect of it there. He just seems to maximize what he has at Kentucky. Very quickly, Mississippi State. I mean, this is going to be such a tough year with the passing of Mike Leach. Unexpected, obviously. How does that program get over that emotional trauma, if you will, for some of these kids and then play meaningful football in the SEC?
Yeah, I think that'll be a bit of a challenge. But you know what? They've got the backfield back there. Rogers, Mark's the tailback. Those guys are back. Will Rogers, I'm not the biggest fan of, but the style of offense that was implemented with the late Mike Leach was very effective for him. Defensively, this team is pretty solid, and I think that's where they're going to lay their hat. Zach Arnett, remember, was the defensive coordinator, takes over now as the head coach. This defense should be effective. They do lose Forbes, who was an unbelievable pick six at the cornerback position now with the Washington Commanders. But for me, I don't think you can necessarily discount Mississippi State when you go down to Stark Vegas. It'll be a challenge. There won't be any games where they lay down.
Absolutely love it. Mizzou 150-1, and then the ultimate long shot in the SEC. Vandy, smart guys.
1,500-1.
Make it longer. Yeah. When we come back, not my team, not your team, America's team. Let's break down the Cowboys, the guys with the stars in their helmet. That's coming up next right here. Sharp Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.